Well, joining me now, as he often does on Fridays, is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome, Ken.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Just talking about the money in the governor's race here in North Carolina. You've seen the figures. What do you make of them?
Well, I enjoyed Jeff's report. I mean, it's very, very interesting. But we've known from the beginning, and as Jeff pointed out, that Pat McCrory, Governor McCrory, been considered the most vulnerable governor in the country. He certainly is. I mean, there's only 12 races this year, but his numbers have never looked great. And it's very rare that an incumbent will trail a challenger in raising money, especially a governor. I mean, I remember in 2010, Rick Perry was pretty close to his Democratic challenger. 2 years ago, Jason Carter, Jimmy Carter's grandson, was pretty close to the incumbent Republican governor there in Georgia. But it's very, very rare for an incumbent governor to be outraised, and that just shows an indication of some of McCrory's vulnerability.
You know, I'm not a political expert. You are. What do you make of
I
the
am.
Fact? Well, I look at a place like Cary, North Carolina, which has been a kind of a swing district in a lot of ways. When it went for Barack Obama in 2008, so did North Carolina. When it did not in 2010, neither did North Carolina. And here you have a vastly more donors. Now, again, this is not, we're not talking about the money. A lot more donors from Cary donating at this point to the Cooper campaign. Can you make anything of that, or is that are the numbers too slippery?
Well, I'm not sure what that means. I did notice, and I kind of smiled at it yesterday and last night in the latest debate between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. They talked about not so much about the money they raised, but the number of donors they've received. There seem to be more and more people, especially on the Democratic side, more and more activity, more and more action regarding the number of donors. But of course, if money was the be-all, end-all, you know, Jeb Bush would be the favorite for the Republican nomination, and Jeb Bush is not faring too well despite all his money. So we can talk about the importance of money. I think it's a good point to raise the number of donors and the people who are active and excited about this election, and there's no question the North Carolina gubernatorial race is the number one governor's race in the country this year.
I'm talking to the political junkie Ken Rudin today on The State of Things. Well, Ken, well, let's talk more about that, the national stage and where we are right now. You know, who's left standing after Iowa and New Hampshire?
Well, of course, the easy story is to talk about the Democrats. I mean, it's not so easy to explain what's going to happen in the future. We do know that Bernie Sanders came from nowhere to virtually tie Hillary Clinton in Iowa. And then on Tuesday in New Hampshire, he just won across the board. He won among women in addition to winning among men. He won by about 20 points in New Hampshire. He always had the lead, but it was never considered that significant. He also won an astounding 84-16% among young voters, or young voters under 30. That was pretty remarkable. A lot of voters' exit polls showed that he was seen as the more authentic candidate. Now, I don't know if that means if it says more about Bernie Sanders than about Hillary Clinton's alleged inauthenticity, because that's been a challenge for her for a long time. But then again, as we've said before, you know, now comes Latino voters in Nevada, African-American voters in South Carolina, many black voters in the March 1st Super Tuesday. So Bernie Sanders has raised a lot of money. He's gotten a lot of excitement out of that. He's got a lot of donors, he's attracted a lot of people to the process. But we'll see what happens. I mean, it's just, you know, stranger things have happened. Those older polls showing Hillary Clinton with huge leads in the subsequent states, I think I would throw them out now, because I think New Hampshire has gotten more and more people paying attention to Bernie Sanders. On the Republican side, obviously, it's much more confusing. I could stop now and you could ask me a question, or I could keep talking.
No, continue to confuse us, Ken.
What fascinates me is that when, you know, you think of that very close third place, very impressive third place finish that Marco Rubio had coming out of Iowa, and then that disastrous debate he had the other night where he basically was repeating word for word his answers, even if they weren't answers to questions. So it was, and then so he goes from a very strong third in Iowa, he becomes the establishment darling, you know, the anybody but Cruz or Trump candidate. And then suddenly John Kasich finishes second place in New Hampshire. I mean, he's very excited with his 19% finish. And now a lot of focus as well, maybe has Rubio's best days passed. Is it now time to focus on Kasich? So I suspect, look, no matter what happens, I mean, what fewer and fewer people are talking about, which makes no sense to me, is that they're talking about anybody but Trump. The fact is, Trump won everywhere in New Hampshire on Tuesday. If you look at how Mitt Romney did, the establishment guy in 2012, how Ron Paul did, the libertarian guy, did in 2012, how John Huntsman, the so-called moderate, did. Trump won all those demographics, all those areas. So, you know, you could talk about, well, is it going to be Bush? Is it going to be Kasich? Is it going to be Rubio among the establishment folks? But right now, Trump, you know, I mean, he second place finish in Iowa, which was not was kind of expected given the evangelical support that went to Ted Cruz. But you dismiss, and I this is something I never would have said 6 months ago, but you dismiss Donald Trump at your own peril, because right now, the Republican electorate is angry. The numbers still show big, great support for him. And he certainly has the wherewithal, financial wherewithal, to continue in every state.
Stay with me, Ken. We're going to take a break right now and come right back to Ken Rudin, political junkie, on the State of Things later on in the show. A couple who prove that even divorce can have a happy ending. Stay with us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today, talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. Ken, you know, you mentioned the ethnic and racial dynamics that are changing, that are significant for the Democrats in upcoming primaries. What about for the Republicans? And I think you pointed to it, the kind of religious and cultural dynamics that change for them as they move south and west.
Well, we did see, of course, as I said earlier, the evangelical vote in Iowa was very strong, and Ted Cruz benefited from that. Then it was a very moderate independent vote in New Hampshire, and Ted Cruz finished third in that because he didn't have that kind of support. But then we go back to a more conservative electorate starting in South Carolina, where you know, conservatives and pro-military candidates have always done very well. And until Newt Gingrich won South Carolina in 2012, it always predicted the winner. It always voted for the ultimate winner of the Republican nominee. And, of course, Jeb Bush is trying to make the argument that's good news for him because he has some key endorsements there, including Lindsey Graham, although I'm not sure what endorsements mean anymore. We saw in New Hampshire the union leader, the most influential newspaper in the state, endorsed Chris Christie, and Chris Christie is no longer a candidate. So things could change. But again, when you keep looking for the so-called moderate establishment Republican, as John Kasich is trying to become, you are moving in the next couple of weeks, you are moving into more conservative territory, and that theoretically should help the Ted Cruz and the Donald Trumps.
But the fact that there's been no knockout punch by any of the others, anybody but Trumps, suggests that in the first place, it keeps him in the race and number one a lot longer because all of them stay in the race. Nobody.
Not only do all of them stay in the race, all of them beat up on each other because basically, as we saw with Chris Christie in New Hampshire, as we saw with the attacks on Marco Rubio after Iowa, there is so much. Everybody feels that they need to be the anybody but Trump or anybody but Cruz candidate, and by doing it, they got into this circular firing squad where they took on each other. Now, maybe John Kasich will be the subject of the arrows coming up now, but right now, what they're doing is eating their own. If you're talking about establishment Republicans, Chris Christie didn't survive it. Carly Fiorina didn't survive it, as we saw in Iowa. There was, of course, Huckabee and Santorum who got out of the race. We don't know how long Ben Carson has for this, but as you point out, Frank, and rightly so, the more there's a divided opposition to Donald Trump and to some extent Ted Cruz, Trump will keep winning these. And as I said, in New Hampshire, he won across the board and among liberals, among libertarians, among conservatives. I mean, I don't know what a liberal Republican is anymore, but certainly among all ideological wings of the Republican Party, it's Donald Trump. And you know, what I said 6 months ago, I said this is something that's going to be, you know, a fad that will not last this long. And
Ken, it was me, the non-political expert who was saying, I don't know, Ken, things are really changing in ways that, anyway, so we may have to switch roles. We'll switch roles.
No longer do we have to listen to pundits and pollsters, now we listen to voters, and that's what it's all about.
How did that happen?
About all along.
It seems to me you talked about the Rubio debate meltdown. Is it me, or are there more debates this cycle?
Well, actually, there were fewer, certainly fewer on the Democratic side. One of the big complaints that the Bernie Sanders people have about Debbie Wasserman Schultz is that they tried to limit the number of Democratic debates to ostensibly protect the establishment frontrunner, Hillary Clinton. But I mean, you know, that's kind of backfiring. You're seeing more and more Democratic debates added to the schedule. On the Republican side, there really are fewer Republicans, even though it seems like we're having one every 15 minutes, but there are fewer Republican debates. One of the reasons, one of the things that Reince Priebus, the Republican National Committee chairman, decided after 2012 that Mitt Romney had to go through so many arrows, slings and arrows during the debates, it ultimately hurt him in November. Of course, a lot of the problems Mitt Romney had were self-inflicted, like the self-deportation he would talk about in the debates. Nobody forced him to say that. But there are actually fewer debates than there were in 2012,
okay.
Although you'd never know
just
it.
Causing...
Like, and there's another Republican debate on Saturday.
Yeah, maybe they're just causing more pain. hey, real quick, Ken, I want to ask you about this. North Carolina High Court ruling, a federal court ruling, put congressional districts in question, ruled them unconstitutional because of obvious racial, obvious to the court, racial gerrymandering on the part of the North Carolina legislature. It's going to the Supreme Court next week. What might happen? And have you seen this in other states?
Yes, I've seen it in a bunch of states. It's happening this year in Virginia. It happened in Texas a few years ago, where the way the legislature drew the districts were clearly racially motivated. That was the claim. But what's fascinating to me about this, and I know we don't have much time, but these two districts, the first and the 12th in North Carolina, they were drawn by Democrats in 1991-92 to elect African Americans to Congress. But now Republicans didn't like it back then. They like it now because basically it's keeping just blacks in those two districts and strengthening whites everywhere else. The Supreme Court, the federal court said this is racial gerrymandering. It's putting a lot of confusion into the vote with the primary coming up on March 15th.
All right, Ken, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Frank, thank you.
Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us most Fridays.